White Rocket Entertainment.
Play fake, Campbell looks deep left for Aroma Shadu. Goes deep left for Aroma Shadu. It's caught. He's got a first down at the 5-yard line. 50 yards, he outfought Anthony Madison. Backs in the eye, Cadillac Williams behind Jake Slaughter. They give it to Cadillac, he comes left, he'll walk in, touchdown. Fourth and 21, Jason Campbell will run out the clock. The Auburn Tigers go to 11-0 in the 2004 season. They will play in the SEC championship game against Tennessee. The dream is still alive. The potential birth in a national championship game and the possibility of a national championship.
Here's Tommy Tuberville in 2014.
It's good to be back around these guys that did something that's hard to do in college football, to win them all. I never forget one of the last things I told the team, and I tell them all this every year at the end of the year, the last game, it's the last time all those guys will ever be together at one time. And I told them right before we left Sugar Bowl, I said, guys, you know, what you did is unbelievable, but what you did will change football. It's going to change. This is not going to happen again. They're not going to let it happen again. And of course, it's taken 10 years for it to get passed and approved, and that's what it usually takes with NCAA. But they changed the football as the way we know it.
This is We Believe, a lifetime in the Auburn family.
Part 7, Hard Fighting Soldiers. Tommy Tuberville, 2004 through 2008.
A minute 8 on the clock from the 13. They're going to go with Jamarcus Russell.
You're going to hear this crowd louder than you've ever heard it before with a redshirt freshman at quarterback.
This place is going nutso right now. Russell in the shotgun. Here comes a blitz. Fired across the middle. Tipped up and intercepted. Junior Rosegrave makes the catch on the deflection. Tigers are going to win. 8 seconds, 9 seconds to go, and that's your ball game. That is your ball game.
How about the play of that Auburn defense? It was a tip ball by Early Dawson. Tipped it. It was behind him. Jamarcus Russell threw the slant. The junior Rose Green right there to pick it off. The senior from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And it's going to be a celebration penalty. It does not matter. Auburn is going to defeat a top five team. And I guarantee you, these guys played with so much heart.
So, John, where we left off in our sixth episode was with the end of the 2003 season, and it had been a very disappointing season. I noted that I wore black rather than orange and blue that much of that season, sort of in protest, because I had been, I said, I'm like the little dude, the little nebbish dude in Office Space. I'm like, I was told we would win the national championship, you know? And so when we did not, in fact, win the national championship, I was extremely disappointed. But I think that most people tend to blame the Nalsminger offense, right? Bobby Petrino had left at the end of 2002. And so, as we talked about in the previous episode, Tuberville had sort of handed the offense over to our offensive line coach and our tight ends coach. And it just didn't work. They ran very conventional plays, kind of runs up the middle and off tackle, and just a standard drop back and pass. And it felt like they were squandering some of the best offensive and defensive, you know, in conjunction, talent that we'd had in quite a while with Jason Campbell and Ronnie Brown and, of course, Cadillac and others. And so in the off season, there was no doubt that Tuberville was going to find us a top-flight offensive coordinator. The only question was, who was it going to be? And who does he end up hiring?
Al Borges.
Al Gorgeous Borges. And Paul Feinbaum laughed and laughed for 3 hours on his show at what an idiot Tuberville was for hiring this dude Al Borges, big guy in his loud Hawaiian shirts, instead of, you know, a real offensive coordinator. And so, bringing in Borges, Auburn proceeds. I forget, what was our record that year?
We went undefeated.
We did. We did indeed.
13-0.
And Borges had a lot to do with it because he found creative ways to use that talent. Here's Jerry Hinnan.
I'm trying to remember, you know, a specific moment, maybe the trick play against Arkansas where, you know, we had the kind of flip back to Campbell, who throws it downfield to Aroma Shadu, who's got nobody within 50 yards of him. But it's just like the guy we've got running this offense is just night and day from what was going on the year before. And, you know, the fact that they were throwing the ball to Ronnie and Cadillac, we knew how good Ronnie and Cadillac were. We'd seen that already. Cadillac carrying the ball approximately 87 times in that Syracuse overtime game and still somehow not being a pile of bones at the end of it. Ronnie Brown just sort of flattening people throughout the 2002 season. We knew that they had the talent. It's just, and that was what was so frustrating about 2003, was that even if you were not a football expert, it's like we've seen what these guys did the year before that, when competent people, and in Bobby Petrino's case, much more than competent people, were running this offense. Why are we watching them play like these diseased ferrets all season in 2003? And so watching Ronnie Brown catch a pass was like, oh my gosh, yeah, why? Why did we have to suffer through last year like this?
Now, I think in later seasons, and as we get toward the end of the Tuberville regime tonight, we will see that the talent level began to drop off a little bit, and many blame Borges for just not being as good of a recruiter as he was an X's and O's coach. And that may well be true, but the fact is, given a cupboard full of goodies as he was in 2004, he certainly knew what to do with them. He figured out ways. The number one thing on his agenda was find ways to use Ronnie Brown and Cadillac Williams on the field at the same time. Because remember, in 2003, we had a stable of four very good running backs, and you only had one on the field at a time.
Mm-hmm.
If Cadillac was playing, and that was more often than not, Ronnie Brown was sitting on the bench, Trey Smith was sitting on the bench, Brandon Jacobs was sitting on the bench, and that's just way too much offensive firepower to have sitting on the bench. And so he found ways to use multiple backs. And do you recall this too about Borges' offense? He was big on using motion before the snap.
Yes, and he did use motion before the snap to make the defense kind of show what they were doing. But also the other thing that really attracted Tuberville was Borges was good at adapting mm-hmm. during the course of the game and making changes at halftime and during the game to adapt to what the defense was doing to us. And that was a huge weakness in the season before
yes.
that had bitten us continually. We couldn't adjust when the defense did something unexpected. We didn't know how to counter what they were doing. And Borges is really good at kind of the counters and the counters to the counters and all that stuff. And that was a big part of the interview process for Tuberville when he was interviewing offensive coordinator candidates, was getting them to describe the different ways that they adapted to what the defenses were doing.
And I feel like there was pressure on Tuberville already, and it wouldn't be the last time. There was pressure on him to get a spread offense guy. And he said that he felt like the spread offense coordinators never had a good answer for what do you do if your thing isn't working at halftime. Whereas Borges had like a list of things that they would change, and he really liked that.
Mm-hmm.
So let me ask you, what was your expectation in 04? I mean, now we talked about Jetgate. And Tuberville barely hanging on, right? I mean, he almost wasn't even our head coach in 2004. Imagine how different things could have been. You know, we very nearly had Bobby Petrino for the 2004 season. And it wouldn't be the last time that the specter of Bobby Petrino would haunt our dreams. So what was your expectation? Because I got to be honest, I had huge expectations after going into 03, after the way 02 ended, and I was mm-hmm. crushed by how things worked out in 03. And so I had resolved going into the 04 season, I was okay with keeping Tuberville, but I was having an internal discussion with myself that I needed to not get so wrapped up in it, and I needed not to be brought so low if things didn't go well. In other words, I was trying to already cushion the blow of another 8-5 season when 04 started. How are you seeing it?
100% the same way. The beginning of 2003 was really upsetting. Yes. Auburn was so great at the end of 2002, and 2003 started off with such a dud that it left a bad taste in your mouth. But the other part was you felt like we had a lot of talent. It was obvious we had a lot of talent. And if the offense was halfway decent at all, then I felt like we could be a really good team, you know, and be a top 10 kind of team. I don't know if we thought we'd win the SEC, but I thought we'd be really good kind of right out of the gate. So, I mean, I felt like if the offense was competent, we would be fine. And the offense was more than competent.
This was Gene Chizik's third year as our defensive coordinator, and as it turned out, it was his last of 3 years. And he had them playing on defense really well. We lost a couple of those big-time linebackers and defensive linemen after the 03 season. But if anything, the defense seemed even tougher in 04. This was the year that our current linebacker coach, Travis Williams, was the leader of the defense and the leader of the linebacking core. And he wasn't like the all-SC stud that Dontarius Thomas and them had been the year before, but they were just competent, you know? They were just solid.
They were. And they, I mean, again, like the defensive line, a lot of solid players, the defensive line, Jay Ratliff, again, who ended up having a long career in the NFL, but was perceived as just kind of a solid, productive defensive tackle. But the big star on defense was Carlos Rogers.
Yeah.
He played cornerback, but he was a big physical cornerback who could come up and play the run. And when teams ran to his size, he could come up and make a play. But, you know, in pass coverage, he was excellent. He was physical enough to go up against the big physical receivers who played at LSU and Georgia and Alabama and schools like that and cover them with no problem. And he was a huge playmaker. He was a real difference maker.
He's the one that our recent cornerback, Carlton Davis, reminded me of as much as anybody. That one guy that's big and can go out there on the island and shut down the other team's best receiver.
Carlton Davis got to that point at the end of his career, but Carlos Rogers, in my mind, was the best guy ever to play that position at Auburn.
Yeah.
I mean, he was just exceptional in every area. This was a great season. He was, you know, he tackled well, he covered well, he made plays at big games, and he was just a dominant player on the field.
He even had his one sort of highlight moment against Georgia, which, if we don't talk about it in a little bit, I'll just mention now, where we were beating Georgia pretty handily, but there was still enough time they could come back, you know, and make it a game. And they got down inside the red zone on us and threw a pass to a wide open receiver, and Rogers came out of nowhere. And it looked like he jumped 30 feet up in the air when it was just easily going to be a touchdown for Georgia. And the whole stadium just kind of gasped. Everybody's mouth hung open because he had just come from nowhere. And
Brown left, Gibson wide right. Play fake. They go deep for Brown. Carlos Rogers with the interception. That's only the second interception of David Green this year.
And that was, I think, his sort of Heisman, you know what I'm saying, for a defensive player,
yes.
That was kind of his Heisman moment, where you're like, dang, this guy is special. If we didn't already know, and we already knew, but that really was something. So, okay, so let's kind of zip our way through the highlights of the 04 season, as we've been doing all the way through our series. We open up with a shutout, Louisiana Monroe, and we're ranked number 17. Now, that's noteworthy because the fact that the 03 season had gone poorly is one of the major factors in why this team did not get to play for the national championship. If the 03 team had been more competitive, and if they had been more competitive against Southern Cal at home in that first game, and I remind you again, because we talked about it in the last episode, they were very competitive with USC. It just doesn't look like it. It was 23-0, I believe. But remember, they scored two touchdowns, both of which came off of turnovers in our red zone. So if we don't fumble the ball or whatever in our own end zone, that game is at worst 9-0 and doesn't seem nearly as bad. And then again, if we'd had any offense at all, it wouldn't have been 9-0. Okay. But because the previous season had made the whole country kind of go, oh, Auburn's overrated, and if we hadn't looked so bad against a genuine power in USC at home, then I think we would have started a lot closer to the top. But we took 5 weeks just to get into single digits in the polls, and then it took another 5 weeks or so. It took 6 more weeks before we were briefly number 2 in the AP poll, and then back down to number 3 where we ended up until after the bowl. So we started so deep in the hole compared to USC and Oklahoma, who basically went pole to pole, end to end, 1-2. In fact, after the first game, we actually dropped. We beat Louisiana Monroe 31-0 and dropped from 17-18. we had a big win over Mississippi State, 43-14. And then here's the first game I really want to talk about. LSU had beaten our brains in on Black Saturday the year before in Baton Rouge. It was ugly. I think it was like 31-7, but it seemed like 101-7. LSU comes in. They had just been national champions, Nick Saban, 2003. They come in having done what we're going to later be trying to do. Now, people forget this. LSU was number 3 at their height most of 03. And it was in the very last poll that they climbed up by just a fraction of a point in one poll and got to be number 2 in the BCS and got to play, I guess, Oklahoma for the national championship that they won. We were in the exact same situation a year later, and we did not get the bump that they got at the end that moved them into the number 2 spot. I never heard anybody talking about that. It drove me crazy. It's not fair that LSU somehow on the last weekend of the season just got into that number 2 spot and we just didn't. But that's what happened. And they had a loss and we didn't. They did it with a loss. I believe they jumped USC, in fact, didn't they?
I think so.
I think that USC had a loss and LSU had a loss and USC was ahead of them. And then LSU climbed ahead of USC on the very last week because the AP ended up naming USC the national champions. Yeah, that was it. The AP ended up naming USC the national champions because they won the Rose Bowl. And the BCS named LSU the national champions because they beat Oklahoma in the BCS. In any case, LSU with Saban comes into Auburn ranked number 5. We're ranked number 14. And this was a game that this was the one they wanted because if we were going to do anything this year, we needed to beat LSU. And this was the closest game of the year, really. And LSU, I believe, led 9-3 in the fourth quarter. We were doing everything we could, right? We were doing the motion. We had Courtney Taylor out there finally as a redshirt freshman along with all those 2002 freshman receivers. Jason had a lot of targets to throw to. He had Cadillac and Ronnie Brown. But LSU had that national championship defense back. And so it was 9-3 LSU in the fourth quarter. And how do you recall how things played out at the end?
Well, it was 9-3 because LSU had missed an extra point. And we drove down the field with about 2 minutes left. There was a minute something left. Jason Campbell threw a touchdown pass to Courtney Taylor.
But there was a fourth down play before that.
What was the play before that?
Before that, it was fourth down and like 10 or 12 yards.
Yes.
In their red zone. And Jason scrambled around and hit Courtney Taylor for the first down. This is with the game where we realized Courtney Taylor, he was the same age as all the other receivers, but they had redshirted him because he had played quarterback in high school. He needed a year to get used to being a receiver. So while Ben Obamanu and Aroma Shadu and Anthony Mix and all those guys are running around, Campbell hits Courtney Taylor for the first down. And then comes back a play or two later, I think it's two plays later, and hits Courtney Taylor in the end zone for the touchdown.
Ball is spotted actually back at the 16. So third down and 12 to go with a minute and a half to go. Campbell steps up under the center, now steps back in the shotgun with 8 on the play clock. A lot of precious time wasting away. He clears out the backfield. 5 wide receivers set on third down. Campbell in the end zone. Caught! Touchdown! Wide open, back of the end zone, 9-9, a minute 14 to go, an extra point. gives Auburn the lead. What a play. What a play call by Al Borges. He splits out five wide. Carnell Williams to the right of side, and he hits the seam route to Courtney Taylor with a minute 14 to go. Third down and 12. What a play. Jason Campbell to Courtney Taylor.
Russell in the shotgun. Here comes a blitz, fired across the middle, tipped up and intercepted. Junior Rosegrave makes the catch on the deflection. Tigers are going to win. 8 seconds, 9 seconds to go, and that's your ball game. That is your ball game.
How about the play of that Auburn defense? It was a tip ball by Early Dossett, tipped it. It was behind him. Jamarcus Russell threw the slant. The Junior Rosegrave right there to pick it off.
And then we missed the extra point after having made 190 in a row.
Wow.
We missed extra point. But there was a penalty on LSU because the NCAA had changed the rules about trying to block field goals and about jumping into the center or whatever. And the LSU guy got called for it. So we got a do-over and he made the kick and we won 10-9.
So we somehow pull out this great win over LSU. And, I mean, it's beating Saban. It's beating the number five team in the country, the defending national champions. There was just a whole lot about that game. You know, we were able to – we didn't have a lot of offense, but we had enough to beat a good team. And the defense played lights out, holding them to 9 points. Just amazing. So the next week, I have to note the Citadel game because this is important. We played the Citadel on September 25th, and we won 33-3. But we shouldn't have been playing the Citadel. And at the end of the season, when people looked back and tried to figure out, well, why did we end up number three? Why didn't we jump over Oklahoma and get to play USC for the national championship? One of the reasons they gave was that our out-of-conference schedule was not strong enough. Our out-of-conference schedule was the Citadel, Louisiana Tech, and Louisiana Monroe. And that's fair, but the problem is, we were supposed to play Bowling Green, which was a really good team. They were like undefeated or whatever. They were a very good team. And that would have helped our strength of schedule quite a bit. But in the offseason, Bowling Green pulled out of playing us because another program had offered them more money to play them. Do you remember who that program was?
It was Oklahoma.
It was Oklahoma. And Oklahoma ends up number two. And we end up number three in part because of strength of schedule.
And that game had been scheduled while in advance, and Bowling Green broke the contract with us and scheduled the game with Oklahoma because Oklahoma was looking for a last-minute non-conference opponent and offered them more money. And it did come. It was a big factor in the discussion.
Yeah, and the Citadel was 1AA, and that hurt our strength of schedule. It essentially gave us one fewer win than Oklahoma when they did the math.
Yes.
So ridiculous, but that's how it ended up playing out. And I think in our decades of dominance, in our chapter on games that never were, right, you know, the games that should have been played but weren't, I think I have Auburn versus Bowling Green 2004. And in that chapter, we're talking about why would this game be on the list? Well, here's why. And it's what we were just talking about. It's unbelievable. So then we go up the next weekend to play at number 10 Tennessee. And this is a game. I was at this game. This is a game for the ages.
To win at a place like this, you got to play as a team. You got to have fun. You guys look like you're ready to go. Let me tell you a couple things now.
No turning back.
No stupid penalties because we're on the road. You know they're going to call them. Somebody hits you, just go back to huddle. Keep your poise. Remember, it's going to be a little loud early. They do get quiet once you start playing good. We're going to try to win this toss. If we do, we're going to play defense first. Defense, I got to get ready. You know they're going to run it, but they're going to go downtown early. So you got to make them play. Poise and confidence. I mean, you got to keep it. I mean, you got to keep your poise. Let's go out there and listen. What I told you at the beginning of the week, it ain't going to take a great one. It's going to take a good one. But we'll take a great one. Let's go!
Well, I mean, it was a big game. It was the big game of the week. It was the ESPN night game. College game day was there. Tennessee was really good. They had a lot of good players. And we went in there and kicked their ass all over that stadium. And the signature play of the entire season probably is Ronnie Brown absolutely running over a Tennessee defender. Like just abusing him as he runs into the end zone.
Ronnie Brown in the game now at tailback. He's the only running back in there behind Jason. Campbell changing his plays. Play clock at 8. Play clock at 7. Still time with 5. Takes the snap, handoff to Brown up the middle. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 in the end zone. Touchdown, Ronnie Brown. Touchdown, Tigers.
Good job. Jason Campbell checking to the bubble right over the center. What a play. Ronnie Brown takes the handoff, and he bulls his way at the 5-yard line and ran over tacklers for the first score of the night for Auburn.
That's a beautiful, there's beautiful photography of that. There may even be a painting of it, you know? It was really something. And if I remember correctly, Tennessee in that game, they had 2 freshman quarterbacks. And we abused both of them. They ended up playing both, and neither one of them did anything, and we killed them.
The Auburn Tigers have come to Knoxville, Tennessee, and manhandled the Volunteers 34-10. Paint these checkerboards orange and blue.
You held your poise, composure, and patience. When you come into a place like this, what you got to do? Let me tell you something. It's been a long time since most of these folks that came to the stadium listened to the fourth quarter on the radio on the way home. That's a great job. Y'all give your coaches a hand.
And part of the reason that this game was so satisfying, too, was that we had been not having a lot of luck in Neyland Stadium the previous few years. Now, we hadn't played them in a couple of years, but in the last few years before the regular series with Tennessee ended, they were killing us in Neyland. So it just felt so good to go up there and beat their brains in their own house.
Here's David Housel.
We thought we'd be pretty good in 2004, but I don't think anybody really realized that team could go undefeated until we went to Tennessee and just demolished them. And from that point on, it was going to be who's good enough to beat off. It wasn't a matter of who is Auburn good enough to beat. It's who's good enough to beat Auburn from that Tennessee game on. Which is a better team? Which is more enjoyable, 2004 or 2010? That's like asking which of your children do you love best.
No, I know.
You know. Our problem is we hadn't had enough of those seasons.
So that was a huge game, Neyland Stadium at night, just beating Tennessee's brains in. We get a good win over Louisiana Tech. There was an Arkansas game. The thing that I remember about this Arkansas game on October 16th, and it was a CBS game, so it was a pretty big game considering it was Arkansas. We were up to number 4 at this point. The thing I remember about this game, and I don't remember much, was I remember that Jason Campbell did like a flea flicker on the first play of the game.
Yes.
For a long gain or a touchdown or something, and kind of put Arkansas on notice immediately that we were really going for it. By the way, here's a weird thing about this Arkansas game. We beat Arkansas that day 38-20, and 20 that Arkansas scored on us is the most points any team scored on us in the regular season that year.
Nice.
Tennessee rang us up for 28 in their loss to us in the SEC Championship game rematch. But other than that 20 points from Arkansas, nobody scored more than 14 on us the whole season. In fact, it's worth it. Let me run down what the other teams scored on us in the regular season this year, just to highlight this 2004 defense. Because, you know, you and I give a lot of credit to the 86, 87, 88, 89 defense, especially 88. And they shut out like 3 teams in a row and all that, and that was great. But here's the point total that the 2004 Auburn defense held the opponent to. 0, 14, 9, 3, 10, 7, 20, 10, 14, 6, and 13 in the regular season. So pretty dang solid defense.
They were a great defense. I mean, they were literally a championship caliber defense.
They absolutely were, yeah. So we beat Kentucky at home pretty solidly. We beat Ole Miss on the road pretty solidly. And then on November 13th, we have a huge game, number 3 Auburn, number 5 Georgia. If I recall correctly, Georgia had lost 1 game all season at that point. This was a really good Georgia team. They had lost 1 game all season, and that was at home against Tennessee. So if you're wondering, how is Georgia number 5 on November 13th, and yet we end up playing Tennessee again instead of Georgia? It was because Tennessee, I guess Tennessee's only loss was to us, but Georgia's only loss was to Tennessee. So I always like to point out, when we beat Georgia, they'd only had one loss. And when we beat Tennessee the second time, their only other loss was to us. So people pointed out, well, you know, you beat Tennessee in the SEC championship game, but that's a team with two losses. I'm like, yeah, they have two losses because we beat them twice.
That's it.
You know, it's just not fair. We hurt our own cause by winning. So yeah, that was an incredible tough fight, that Georgia game. I was at that one too. And that was one where Cadillac threw a touchdown pass.
Single wide receivers to each side. Two receiver bunch set to the right. Taylor comes in motion now. Three receiver bunch set. And they'll toss it to Carnell Williams. Wants to throw, and he does. Wide open. Mix at the 10 to the 5. Touchdown! Oh, my goodness! Oh, my goodness! Williams to Mix. Touchdown, Tigers! Oh, my gosh! How about Carnell Cadillac Williams? They run the bunch set, bring Courtney Taylor in motion. The toss sweep, but no. Carnell Williams, he runs it outside, he fakes it up, and he tosses a beautiful throw to Anthony Mix. Greg Blue, the Rover, came up in support. Anthony Mix takes it down for the second touchdown for Auburn.
Georgia had a really good safety that was really fast and really tough, and he loved to come up and run tackle. And so we got down to like the 25-30-yard line, it seems like, and we pitched the ball to Cadillac, and that Georgia safety totally bit on it, came up. He wanted to smack Cadillac good, you know? And Cadillac just pulled up and tossed the ball right over his head to a wide-open receiver, maybe Mix, wide open in the end zone for the touchdown. And then that was also, again, the game where Carlos Rogers knocked down the Georgia wide-open touchdown. And so between those two plays, it was 24-0 in the last few seconds of the game, and Georgia was able to drive down against our third-string defense and score a touchdown on the last play, I think, and make it 24-6. And I just remember my dad being so mad that they scored, and I'm like, but we won 24-6. We were undefeated. And he's like, yeah, but I wanted to shut him out. He does not like Georgia. He wanted to shut him out.
I'm with him. I'm 100% there. I think I was mad at the end of this game, too.
Yeah. Jerry Hinnon again.
That Georgia game was maybe the most satisfying, not necessarily the most euphoric, but maybe the most satisfying Auburn television viewing experience of my life, because they could have played Georgia for 20 quarters, and I don't think Georgia would have scored more than 13 points. They absolutely snuffed them completely out. Carlos Rogers played, certainly, if you're asking me to name, like, okay, what was the best game you've ever seen an Auburn cornerback play, automatically, oh, Carlos Rogers against Georgia in 2004. The Georgia team was pretty good, I think number 5 coming into that game, and it was just complete, total domination, not necessarily reflected on the scoreboard as much as it should have been, because we are talking about a Tommy Tuberville team here, but it was just a manhandling. That game was never in doubt after the first 5 to 10 minutes. And just to watch a good Mark Richt Georgia team just get stuffed in a sack like that was, I mean, satisfying really is the right word for it. It was like drinking the world's best milkshake. It's not like necessarily eating the world's best steak or something, but it's like just so just deep down in your gut, yes, that's what I want. And that was what it felt like to me the season to build up towards.
But it was such a great win, man. 24-6 over a one-loss Georgia team.
That's well, but also, like, we've talked about the Georgia rivalry a lot. How often do we, like, really kick their ass?
Mm-hmm.
It's few and far between.
Yes, that's true. And shut them out.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, so the next week we go to Alabama, and this is like the precursor to the 2010 comeback game, because, you know, sure enough, it looked like Alabama was going to rise up, a not very good Alabama team. I don't remember what their record was. In fact,
6-6 at the end of the year.
Oh, good Lord, yeah. I was thinking, back then we were thinking shades of 1984, you know, where the 5-6 Alabama team beat us. And it was, I want to say it was 13-7 Alabama at halftime. And I feel like we missed a couple of easy field goals that would have tied the game. In fact, I think we missed a field goal right before halftime that would have at least made it 13-10. And all the momentum was going Alabama's way. All the momentum was Alabama's way. Our guys were demoralized. And I remember Al Borges saying that at halftime, he just went in there and told the offense, we're going to attack them. We're going to, you know, act like it's 0-0. We're going to come out and just punch him in the mouth. And he figured out, he says, you know what we're going to do is we're just going to throw the long ball. And so I remember in the second half, we came out and Jason started just airing it out. And we might not have been able to get the run game and the short passing game going, but I feel like we scored those two touchdowns on bombs. I don't have the.
Well, they were bringing everybody up to play the run.
Yeah.
And they were like, we're not going to let you beat us this way. And so we had to throw it over their head a little bit.
And we did. And so 21-13, comeback win. But guess what? This is something I did a little research on before our show. If you look at the AP ratings from this season, we were stuck at number 3 the whole second half of the season. And we were just desperately trying to get to number 2 in the BCS. And at least in the AP poll, on the week of November 13th through 20th, after we beat number 5 Georgia, we actually went up over Oklahoma into 2nd in the AP. And that could have been enough by the end of the season if nothing had changed to get us to number 2 in the BCS. But then we turn around and struggled and looked so bad against Alabama and had to pull it out with those bombs in the second half that they voted us back down to number 3 behind Oklahoma. Because I feel like Oklahoma that week had a big win maybe over Nebraska or Texas or somebody like that, while we had to struggle to beat a 6-6 Alabama.
Yep.
And so we dropped back to number 3. So if you want to blame Alabama for even more things than you already do, John, you can blame them for causing us to not be number 2 in the BCS that year, which is just another reason to want to scream. So we go to the SEC championship game. We draw a rematch with Tennessee. And you know, I was at this game too. And the thing about this championship game, Tennessee really wanted to win, and we were having to play them again. We'd already played them, and we were all kind of distracted with the will we get to the national championship game. I feel like we kind of looked past Tennessee a little bit maybe in this game.
Yes.
And they had some long runs on us. And if you look back at this season, at the second half of this season, the thing that our defense started doing really weird in the last 2 or 3 games this season is giving up big plays late. We gave up a couple of long runs to Tennessee's running backs in this game, and it was 38-28. And again, it was Jason Campbell coming out and just airing out the long ball, something we hadn't been able to do in a decade or more. That was the difference on offense, is Campbell just lighting up with those receivers when they were able to shut down Cadillac and Ronnie.
On first down and 10, Campbell fakes the handoff. Going to throw downfield. He's got a wide open Taylor at the 35, 40, 45 to midfield. Still on his feet into Tennessee territory and out of bounds at the 30-yard line. Bam! Just like that. Auburn into Tennessee territory. A 46-yard play from Campbell to Taylor.
But in the Virginia Tech game in the Sugar Bowl, we gave up a long play for a touchdown late in the game, too, that hurt our optics, you know what I mean, in trying to get the pollsters to vote for us like they had USC the year before. We had a hope that just like the AP had voted for USC instead of voting for the BCS winner, they would vote for us at 13-0 instead of the BCS winner. But the problem was USC destroyed Oklahoma and looked great. And we gave up a late touchdown and won a defensive struggle 16-13 against number 9 Virginia Tech in the Sugar Bowl. And so we win 16-13, and there was no way at that moment anybody was going to vote us over USC.
That's right.
Jerry Hennen.
The frustration of watching USC and Oklahoma flirt with losing all season, Oklahoma against Oklahoma State, USC, they could have lost as well. It was so frustrating to watch Auburn finally put everything together and then just simply have the bad luck. There's no way around it. Nothing but bad luck of having the top two preseason teams happen to go undefeated. That Auburn team in 2004 will go down as the last Power Conference undefeated team to not have a chance to play for a national championship. They're going to be the last ones ever. Of the entire BCS era, you know, not counting Big East teams, of the Power Five conferences as we know them today, Auburn was the only one that went undefeated and didn't get to play for a national championship. They're going to be the last one ever to go undefeated, not play for a national championship. And that's going to gnaw at my soul for the rest of my existence. And that still drives me insane. I think that's probably clear from listening to me right now. All of that said, it doesn't take away from the fact that that team was pretty much perfect. I don't know if they would have beaten USC or not. I don't know if they would have beaten Oklahoma or not, whatever. But I really would have loved to have seen them try. They deserved a try. And it sucks that they are basically the martyrs for going from 2-4 teams for the playoff. They had a playoff during the BCS era. It was just a two-team playoff. But in the end, what I'm going to remember first about that season is not the soul gnawing. It's going to be watching Ronnie Brown and Cadillac Williams be used the way that they're supposed to be used. Watching Jason Campbell throw for a million yards against Tennessee the way that he should have been used his entire career. We talked about culminations with Dye and some of these other things. That wasn't the culmination of Tuberville's era necessarily, but it was the culmination of that batch of talent, of Rogers, of Campbell, of Cadillac, of Ronnie. Everything finally coming together for a season that certainly, you know, I haven't made like a personal ranking of where each Auburn season fits in my personal cosmology, but obviously it's right there with 2013. And in some ways that Georgia game, you know, in certain fashions would be better than anything that happened even in 2010 or 2013.
So when this season was over, on balance, were you happy? Were you sad? Were you happier for what we had done or more disappointed for what we hadn't? Or where was your head?
I'm never not going to be happy after we have an undefeated season. I mean, I was frustrated that we didn't get our chance. But I think the big thing, you talked a lot about the different reasons we didn't get a chance. I think a lot of the reason was we had played Southern Cal twice in the years before that, and we had lost. And like you said, the second game didn't appear to be close. And so I think that played into the thing. I think if we had beaten them or played them close, I think it would have been different, a different discussion. But we didn't get that chance. And I mean, I definitely think like 2004 Auburn changed college football.
Yes.
It changed how we perceive these things. And I think eventually, you know, that kind of discussion led to the playoff. So, but I mean, I love this team. It was a great team. It was a great season. I'm a defense guy, and that was maybe the best defense in our lifetime. It was a really fun season. We kicked Tennessee's ass. We kicked Georgia's ass. It was very enjoyable.
Let me give you a few numbers real quick. These are some eye-popping numbers from that season. Jason Campbell's passing numbers in 2004. And by the way, I got to say, Carnell Williams and Ronnie Brown both could have easily turned pro after 2003. They both came back. The likelihood was that they would both turn pro. There was a chance that one of them would turn pro and the other one would say, oh, well, then I'll get all the spotlight to myself, so I'll stay for one more year. Probably that Cadillac would go pro and Ronnie would come back. But could have been the other way around. Instead, they both came back, and that made such a huge difference. So Jason's numbers for that year, 188 completions in 270 passes for a 69.6, let's just round that up to a 70% completion rate, 2,700 yards passing, 10 yards per attempt, and 20 touchdowns with 7 interceptions and a passing rate of 100, of a passer rating of 173. Pretty good.
Very good.
And then quickly, Carnell and Ronnie. Carnell rushed 239 times for 1,165 yards on a 4.9 yard per carry average and 12 touchdowns. He also caught 21 passes for 152 yards and a touchdown. And, of course, he threw a touchdown too. And Ronnie had 153 attempts for 913 yards on a 6 yard per carry average and 8 touchdowns. And he caught 34 for 313 and a touchdown. So put those two together and we had about 2,000 yards of rushing with our top two backs and 20 touchdowns. So 20 passing touchdowns and 20 rushing touchdowns from those two guys. Not bad.
Oh, not bad at all.
Not bad at all.
They were great players, and that was a great season for them to cap off their Auburn careers.
It was. So they had come back for that senior year, and they all graduated. And in the first round of the NFL draft, Ronnie Brown went second. Cadillac went fifth, I believe, to Tampa.
Yes.
And then Jason Campbell went to the Redskins, and Carlos Rogers also got drafted, I think, like number 9. So all four of those players got drafted in the first round, and I believe this was the first time that two running backs got drafted in the top 5 on the same team.
Yes.
I know there was something big about that. All right, and that's the first 45 minutes or so of episode 7 of We Believed. our documentary series about Auburn football from 1975 to the present and beyond. And for as little as a dollar a month, you can become a patron and hear the rest of that episode where we go on for another hour or so and talk about 2005, 2006, 2007, and 2008 through the end of the Tuberville regime and the beginning of Gene Chizik arriving. The easiest way is to go to www.auwishbone.com and hit the big orange Become a Patron button. As always, we have to thank our current patrons who do so much to keep our programs on the air. We have a new anonymous donor this month, which we appreciate, along with Matthew Flowers, Carl Von Drunker, Samuel Salvatore, and Christopher Burleson, Phil Amthor, Ben Spooner, Bradley Blackman, William Glenn Matthews, Gary Grant, AU Fan KSC, Brian Gray, Willie Carden, Tom Anderson, Susan Trawick, Logan Chilton, Stephen Thompson, Chris Usher, Steve Trawick, and Richard Stevens. We have William Morgan, WDE Ritchie, Winston Boddy, Clinton Stewart, and Christopher Stewart, guys. Mickey B, Phil Davis, Joshua Corbett, John Otsuki, Preston Settle, Daniel Odom, AU Falling Up, Alchemist, Kevin Smith, Clarence Alford, Will Summerford, David Hegler, Johnny Caldwell, Theodore Gary, Reynolds Wolf, Joel Beckham, Valiant Hermes, Jacob and Robin Fleming, Clay Henson, Ann Kangian, Catherine England, George Gaston, John McCune, David Evers, Timothy, Steve Harlan, Dan Thompson, Wes Atkinson, Rich Reimer, Blake Heron, Hugh Anderson, Stephen Houston, Cato the Barner, Danny Flack, Papa Todd, Russell Milling, Kevin Kenoy, Don Zederman, Ross, Lane Middleton, Shannon Butson, Randall Walker, Shane Bailey, Mick Vizhakana, Chris Thrash, Tony Perry, Alex Nguyen, Josh Teal, David Simpson, Earl Ricks, Mike Finley, and C.T. Wayne. And finally, we have Jeremy Minton, Wardam Wade, Spanky, J.W. Rice, Jason Albrick, Russell Souther, Paul Bankson, Joseph Iliff, Justin Bean, Kevin Mahan, Stephen Wyatt, Trevor Johnson, Auburn Elvis, Robert Drain, Brandon Smith, Royce Alvarez, Thomas Brinson, David Smiley, Matthew Wagstaff, Donnie Reynolds, Wade Carson, Ivor Evans, John Zavachin, Michael Morton, Lawrence Kane, Darren Pyle, Chris Camo, Ben Amos, Ruth and Darren Sutherland, Patrick Williams, Rob Morgan, Stephen Schuster, James Taylor, John Stubbs, Kenneth Brent Raines, Nicholas Craig, Joseph Miller, Mark Squire, and our there's Chris Brent Rumble and our anonymous other donors and Surfer Chickify, our occasional donor, and all of our other occasional donors. We appreciate all of you so very much, especially at this time when we are not really in a position to put out much new content. There's just not a lot to talk about, and I know you don't want to hear John and me talk for an hour about coronavirus and missing Auburn sports, so I thought that we would just go to the well. You haven't heard this episode yet, so you'll get 45 minutes of it, the 2004 season, for this episode, and I hope you enjoyed it, and we will be back soon with another new episode. Again, www.auwishbone.com. My time is up. I thank you for yours. War Eagle, everybody, and we'll see you soon.
Thanks for listening to the AU Wishbone. Find links to everything we do at www.auwishbone.com. For more Auburn fun, join us on Twitter at @auwishbone and at facebook.com/auwishbone. War Eagle.
The AU Wishbone is produced by Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer. Copyright 2020.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone podcast.